Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Anna Sale in for Brian Lehr. Summer, of course, is the time for road trips. How many of you have crowded into a car with friends or family to seek out some sought-after destination? Maybe it was a historic site or a camping trip. Maybe it was a concert. Or were you still friends when you got there? Well, our next guests are going on a trip of their own. The Atlantic Monthly's national correspondent James Fallows and his wife, the author and linguist Deborah Fallows, are taking a journey across the country via small plane. They're embarking on an open-ended exploration of small-town America, and they want your suggestions on where they should go to see how America is changing, to see how America is reinventing itself, to see how America is resilient. James and Deborah Fallows are here to tell us about that trip. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you. This is Jim, and Deb's on the other phone, so we're glad to talk to you.
Okay.
Thank you, Anna.
Sure. Now, Jim, tell me about the project. It's called American Futures, Reinvention and Resilience Across the Nation. What are you looking for when you go to these small towns?
So I think the idea, we came up with this idea with the help of one of our sons over the past year or so, and the background is, for the last dozen years, we've flown around the country a lot in a small propeller plane, and every time we've done so, we've seen things in Iowa or Nebraska or Wyoming or Missouri or Louisiana that just weren't part of the normal news discourse and gave us a whole different sense of how things were developing in the U.S. Also, as we've talked about on your show over the years, we've both been living in China for a long time. Mm-hmm. Whenever we went to some little place there, there are things we knew that were a lot of different from Beijing or Shanghai, so we figured it was time to apply that the classic American road trip motif with the angle of the small airplane to see all these little places that really you can't get to by interstate, but they do have airports. So that's what we're going to start doing probably tomorrow.
All right. Now, Jim and Deborah are also taking nominations for where they should go. And listeners, we want to hear from you. We know New York is this big, sprawling metropolis, but we've also got some great small cities in the area of our own. What small cities in New York should Jim and Deborah travel to? Give us a call with your suggestions, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. We'll also take suggestions for places outside the New York area. We know we've got a lot of people who've left some of these small towns for economic opportunity in the big city. But if you're proud of what's happening back in your hometown, give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Now, Deborah, tell me about what you're going to be looking for. You're a linguist, and your role on this trip has been described as looking at language and life across the country. Give us an idea of what you're going to be watching.
Well, I'm going to be doing a bunch of things. One is ground control. Just there are a lot of logistics that are involved in getting the plane up and getting us down and the kind of everyday stuff like where do you do the laundry and what do you eat when you're in the plane and what do you pack and things like that. But once we're on the ground, I'm looking forward to doing a couple things. One, as a hobbyist, I love to swim. So I always am looking for places to swim and will kind of swim anywhere from the local Y to a river to the lake or whatever pool I can find. And I find it's a good place to kind of touch base with the culture of the town where kids go to hang out, where people go to relax or get their recreation. And as a linguist, I'm really interested in this whole story of the linguistic landscape of our country now because there is such a change in the language, in the picture of language. On the one hand, everybody listens to the same accents on the radio or on TV, and you can say that things are melding together. On the other hand, the regionalisms are still profoundly strong. All you have to do is touch down in South Dakota or North Dakota to get a sense of Fargo, from the movie. And just also to see the influences from all the immigrant populations from everywhere and how they're blending in. So I think that the whole looking and listening to how people talk and the idioms they use and the special vocabulary they use will be a really fun thing. And there's been so much historically done on linguistic atlases around the country to see what it looks like now.
And you're partnering also with Public Radio's Marketplace, APM's Marketplace. Are you going to be collecting audio of some of these voices?
I hope so. I've got my little tape recorder, and they're certainly going to be talking to people regionally, so it'll be fun to listen to those. So the answer is yes.
Okay. Well, now, Jim, in your introductory post about the project, you talked about how much of the adaptation that's happening in this country, the next stage of economic, demographic, and social history, is taking place not in major metropolises, but in these small towns. That's where you can really see what's shifting in the country. I was struck by the same thing when I did a road trip last year through swing states. Do you think the news media is not doing a good enough job covering what's happening in these small American communities?
I think there's a natural tendency in any big country news media. You know, the news organizations are based in big cities. You're in New York right now. We mainly live in Washington, D.C. L.A. is the hub of the entertainment industry. It's a great big country, and I think it's natural in the sweep of much news coverage to go to these small towns, number one, if there's some kind of disaster, you know, like the explosion in West Texas or whatever. Number two, just for something kind of odd, whether it's a two headed cow or some other oddity like that, a million person Harley Davidson rally. And third, it seems to me people often come up with some concept in the editorial planning meeting about whether it's meth epidemic in the heartland or whatever you want, and then go out and find some place to apply it to that template, as opposed to just going out and say, if you're in a number of these small towns, what do you notice that you weren't aware of before you went? And I'll give you one illustration. We've done in the last couple of years, but also a couple of months, a lot of this traveling in the upper Midwest, and it's startling how much the theme of many of these cities is transformation through Latino immigration. Now, you wouldn't think of Iowa, Nebraska, and Kansas as being in the main arenas of sort of this next wave of immigration with largely positive effects, but much more than even in Southern California, you do see a lot of this happening in the Midwest. So it's looking for things that you, as you saw from your road trip, that you don't know until you go. That's what we're looking for.
And we're taking your calls for nominations on where they should go, 212-433-9692. Leslie in Palisades, New York, what do you think?
Well, I would love to hear what you think about Park Forest, Illinois.
Why?
Well, when I was a little girl growing up there, it was considered an experimental town. They tried things there that they were just building it from scratch, and they invited young college-educated engineers, all kinds of scientists and their families to move there. And as a result, they had some very wonderful, innovative ideas. For example, I remember they had a crying room. They built a movie theater, and there was a crying room there. So when mothers went with their children to the movies and the children cried, the mother could just go into this room, continue to watch the movie, but it was soundproofed so the child could cry and not disturb the others. I remember that very distinctly. And I remember innovative things with grocery stores. You'd pull up your car after grocery shopping. You'd pull it up to a place, and someone would come out and actually put your groceries in your car for you. I mean, I've never seen that again.
Well, thank you so much for your call, Leslie. I want to know if that crying room is still there. Jim in Hell's Kitchen, what's your nomination?
My nomination is my hometown in Kansas, Ashland, Kansas.
Ashland.
Yes, I grew up there, and I'm fifth generation, and there's five and six generations of people. This town is 13 miles from the Oklahoma border, 50 miles south of Dodge City, which was the big city that we went to. I think it's now 10 or 15,000 people. There's no fast food restaurants, but it does have an airport that stunt pilots use all the time because it's so isolated. It's farming and ranching, and it's still very vibrant. I was there in May, and the population is maybe half of what it was 50 years ago, but it still has good schools and a hospital and a great historical museum and, you know, great people.
All right.
Here.
Jim, thanks for your nomination. And one in New York from Maureen in Manhattan. What do you recommend?
Oh, hello.
Hi, Maureen. What's your pick?
Fleischmann's, New York. It's a little town. It's about 3 hours from New York, but they're starting a very thriving Spanish community. It's down on its luck now, but it has beautiful swimming holes, and you probably could get, there's so much land there, there's people with their own private, you could probably land your plane there, but Stewart Airport is a small airport near there. It's probably about an hour and a half from Albany, but there's a smaller airport it's probably an hour away from.
All right.
Swimming holes is what remains. If you're looking for gorgeous swimming holes, that lower Catskill area in Delaware County, New York, is wonderful.
All right, good swimming holes. And according to the 2010 census, a population of 350 people, my producers tell me. So I want to ask you, the subtitle of this project is Reinvention and Resilience Across the Nation. Does that mean that you're going to be looking at small towns that are on their way up, that have figured out how to deal with these major economic and social forces that have made it a little rough for small towns? Or are you going to also go to towns that haven't quite figured out what the next phase looks like?
I think both. And, you know, the nature of any serious journalism, whether it's on public radio or in the Atlantic or any place else, is to try to convey the good and bad reality of places. And I guess the reason we phrased it that way is that in our preliminary travels around, we've seen more impressive news of that kind of adaptation than you would think from most of the prevailing news coverage. And so, for example, we did a trial run last month in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, where we spent a couple of days where there are really surprising stories of high tech and farming and service industry and medical innovations and developments that we hadn't been aware of before we went there. So it's not going to be a good news sort of Norman Rockwell report, but we think there's a lot of encouraging development and the whole texture of the country that is sort of blurred over when you just see some news report about drought in Kansas.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got a recommendation for another town in South Dakota, Bob in Morristown, New Jersey. What do you think?
Mitchell, South Dakota didn't have anything to attract people. It's just flat cornfields, so they just invented it. They've got a thing called the Corn Palace out there, which once had a facade made totally of corn cobs. And you take a tour of the Corn Palace, and you wind up in about an acre and a half or 2 acres of probably the tackiest gift shop in America. But it's all great fun. And it now supports, I think, 5 hotels. And it just, you know, to me, it represents the spirit of America. We don't have anything, so we'll just invent it.
All right, Bob. Thanks for your call. And one more, TJ in Tuckertown, New Jersey. You recommending your own hometown?
Yeah, only because a lot of people don't realize it's a small town. It's one of the bay towns down outside of LBI. And there is an airport down the road in Eagleswood. But it's one of the second, I believe it's the second oldest port of entry in the nation. And it was built basically on the clamming and fishing and boat building industry. It can't get any bigger because it's surrounded by a much bigger township. So it's kind of enclosed. And if you're going for swimming, you can go in the creek or in the ocean. There's a lot of waterways and stuff like that.
All right, now, I said Tuckertown. Is it Tuckerton?
Tuckerton.
Tuckerton.
T-O-N.
How do things feel in Tuckerton these days?
We're bouncing back. I mean, we're a small community, so we all support each other. And when Sandy hit, we took a brunt of it. A lot of people didn't realize that everybody focused on, the Rockaways and stuff like that in New York, which is totally understandable and LBI. But we lost in Tuckerton Beach, I think we lost 28 houses disappeared. They just off the foundation and lifted away and floated away. So we're bouncing back, and our clamming industry took a little bit of a hit. But like our major, one of the aquaculture farms that we have kind of is not there anymore. But basically, we support each other and ourselves, and everybody's, you know, we're a community. It's basically like those traditional, you hear about those Midwest small town communities. We're like that, only on the bay. We're, you know, baymen and pineys down there.
Right here in New Jersey. Thanks so much for your call, TJ. Jim, I also want to make sure to ask you about the mapping aspect of this project, because it's actually really cool looking at what you're doing as you do post about how we can understand where you are. Tell us a little bit about that.
There's a company based in Redlands, California, which happens to be my own small hometown in Southern California, that over the last 20 or 30 years has become the giant around the world in what they call GIS, Geographical Information System, sort of like the professional version of Google Earth. And so they have been working with us to find ways you can illustrate almost anything. If you wanted to talk about, say, Tuckerton, New Jersey, you could show how the, with different maps, how the fishing business has changed over the decades. Or you could show where things were before and after Sandy. If you're going out into the Midwest, you can say, here's how the drought has changed land prices 5 years ago, 10 years ago. Here's how it's changing the patterns of agricultural exports. So we're trying to we learned about this sort of by serendipity, and it seems like a very useful journalistic tool to introduce in the same way that people now very easily can embed video or audio clips or pictures. Being able to create on the fly these explanatory maps seemed like an interesting angle to pursue.
Deborah, you mentioned we've heard you've been to Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Where are you going next?
We're probably heading off tomorrow to Holland, Michigan, which is north of Grand Rapids, right on Lake Michigan on the western side of the state of Michigan.
Oops, you there, Deborah?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. You're back.
Oh, sorry. It's Holland, Michigan, a really interesting old Dutch town, which is has a lot of manufacturing and a lot of universities and a lot of strong tradition. And I would also add here that you can tell just from your callers that the passion that comes with this kind of sensibility people have toward their own small hometowns. And Jim and I are both from small towns. I grew up in northern Ohio, right on Lake Erie, in a town called Vermilion, which has 10,000 people. Jim's, I consider, a bigger town of about 50,000 people in Southern California. But there are so many stories that people connect to in these small towns, and stories that they want to tell about their lives and how formative they are in their lives and what they hope for their kids' lives. So I think, you know, part of the American dream really comes out in the storytelling of this.
Yeah. I have one more question. Who steers the plane?
So I am technically at the controls, but in airplane flying, as in all else over our years of marriage, the real control is in the other seat.
And how long are you going to be traveling?
I think as long as this goes. Actually, Deb, why don't you answer that?
Yeah, well, I'm planning on kind of forever. I think we'll probably go out for 2 or 3 weeks at a time and then come home and, you know, check the mail, feed the cat, water the plants, and then head out again for following the good weather from across the north and the Great Plains during this nice warm season, and then heading south to the deep south as winter comes, and then going back and forth again. I think there's no stopping.
All right. Jim and Deborah Fallows are taking off across America in their small plane as part of a project called American Futures, Reinvention and Resilience Across the Nation. Before you go, I want to mention I'm from Charleston, West Virginia. I noticed it's already been nominated.
Yes.
I'm going to do some lobbying. It's a great little town. Make sure you stop by there. Thanks so much for joining
us. It's on the list.
Oh, great. Thanks so much for joining us, and happy travels.
Our pleasure.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Coming up, we're going to look at what happens when you age out of foster care, and there's some new adoptions for adults. I'm Anna Sale in for Brian Lehrer.